Well, good day, everyone, and welcome to our eighth session on the blessing. This has been a fun one for me to go back and study for my own benefit, and I trust the same has been true for you. I apologize for having to skip a week. We've got that behind us now, and I've looked forward to being able to record this for you. Today, we're going to be talking about restoring knowledge of the blessing, and that's really important, I think, not only for the children of Israel, as we're going to see today, but it's important for us today to understand that that same blessing is still at work for us, and we can let it slip if we're not careful. Now, last week, we talked about Joseph, a slave, a prisoner, and the blessing. We saw how it worked in him, and it works because God said in Genesis 1:28, then God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth and subdue it. And Joseph lived life from the blessing, no matter what circumstances he was in. We were introduced to Joseph as a 17-year-old son of Israel, whom he loved more than all his other boys. If we saw, he wasn't the youngest, but he was given a multicolored tunic by his father, and that just aggravated his brothers even more. And then to make it worse, Joseph told them about a dream he'd had, and how their sheaves, representing the boys, the 11, were bowing down to him. And that just made things exponentially worse. What happened? They now went from being aggravated with him and treating him badly to wanting to kill him. Now, a little later, we saw that Israel asked Joseph to check on his brothers and the flock as they were sent out away from the home to tend the sheep. And we saw that Joseph didn't have a response. Well, why should I go? They don't care about me. But what did he do? He went for his father. And why is this so important? Because he didn't allow any strife to enter in. Strife will kill the blessing. And Satan knows that. And so that's why he tries to bring it into us. But no matter how people may treat us, if we walk in love, they cannot take the blessing away from us or steal the fruit of the blessing. But what did the brothers do? Well, they schemed a way to kill him. Then they decided to sell him to some traders who were coming by. And so he became a slave as they went on to Egypt. But they told Israel that he'd been killed, and they showed him his coat, which they had put the blood of some animal upon it. But Joseph had a dream. Do you think he ever gave up on it? I don't, because what we saw last week was just so wonderful. He prospered as Potiphar's slave. And I like this verse in Genesis 39:3. His master saw that the Lord was with him. How important that is. What that's saying is the Lord's blessing was upon him and it was producing for him. And what did it cause? Everything in Potiphar's house to prosper. And then came Potiphar's wife. She accused him of doing something which he didn't do, and he was thrown in jail. But here he was. He found himself in jail and running it. And the scripture says in the same chapter, 39, verse 23, it was because the Lord was with him, and whatever he set his hand to, the Lord made it to prosper. And then Pharaoh had a dream, and the cupbearer who, along with a baker, had told Joseph of their dream after they were thrown in the jail, told Pharaoh about it. And so they called for Joseph, and he comes and he talks about the dream means 7 years of abundance and 7 years of famine. But he spoke out of the wisdom of God, and he was able to tell him what he needed to do to prosper in it. And because of that wisdom of the blessing flowing to him, Pharaoh saw this. And here's that phrase again, that God was with Joseph, and he made him ruler over all his house. Everything in the kingdom, he took control of it because he saw the anointing on him. And what was the rest of the story? Well, the famine extended throughout a wide area. And so Israel sent his brothers to Egypt to buy grain, and that led to them being able to be prospered by the blessing which was upon Joseph and now Egypt. And so they took grain, but they also did what? Came back and lived in the area, and the king gave them the best land. Now, God blessed Joseph, and Israel got, and Egypt got blessed. God blessed Joseph, and that blessing, because Egypt was blessed in his plan, carried over to sustain the lineage, the sons of Israel, I would say. And what we see here is the blessing at work in their life. Now today, I'm going to skip forward a number of years, and we're going to talk about restoring knowledge of the blessing, and we're going to see how Moses was operating in that same blessing for the children of Israel, and that precipitated their rescue. Look with me in Exodus, the first chapter, and I want to read two verses in this one chapter, 6 and 7. Exodus 1, 6 and 7. It says, "And Joseph died, and all his brothers, and all that generation. But the sons of Israel were fruitful, and increased greatly, and multiplied, and became exceedingly mighty, so that the land was filled with them." Now, what is being described here? The blessing at work in the life of the children of Israel, the sons of Israel. And that blessing was working magnificently. You're going to see here that some of the same things that happened to Isaac all begin to happen to them. And that's really in the next verses, 8 through 12. It says, "Now a new king arose over Egypt who did not know Joseph." So he wasn't familiar and didn't care about what had happened all those years ago. "And he said to the people, 'Behold, the people of the sons of Israel are more and mightier than we.'" Does that remind you of what happened to Isaac in the 26th chapter when they stopped up his wells? Stupid thing to do, but yet that's what strife will do, is cause you to act stupidly, and it'll cause you to hurt your own self. Verse 10, the new Pharaoh says, "Come, let us deal wisely with them, lest they multiply and in the event of war also join themselves to those who hate us and fight against us. And then they would depart from the land." Verse 11 continues, "So they appointed taskmasters over them to afflict them with hard labor. And they built for Pharaoh storage cities, Pithom and Ramses. But the more they afflicted them, the more they multiplied and the more they spread out, so that they were in dread of the sons of Israel." Could that be anything else other than the blessing at work? Even in this time of oppression, the Lord was prospering them in what they were able to do and caused continual increase to come. So the Egyptians saw this blessing at work, and I think that's important. They recognized it, and then they enslaved them. But you think they were surprised after they enslaved them and they continued to prosper? And they grew to a point where they finally said, "We got to do something about it." And that's when they began to throw and to kill all of the baby boys born to the children of Israel into the Nile River to try to control their growth. But what else was happening as they tried to do this? Obviously, the Pharaoh did not know about Joseph and the blessing that was on him. But during this time, can you see also that the knowledge of their God was decreasing during this time? Now, they were still walking in some of the blessing, but I would also purport that some of the blessing and the knowledge of the blessing was also diminishing. And then it so happened that Moses was born, and you know the account. They put him in a basket and floated him in the Nile near where Pharaoh's daughter was. She found him. And after that, she returned him to his real mother, who raised him until she brought him back to her in the royal household. Now, I would submit that the blessing of the Lord was at work protecting Moses. Again, it's a multifaceted thing. It takes care of us in every way. The blessing of the Lord protected Moses. And you know, I really believe that the same thing is happening in our nation. And by that I mean, we were a blessed nation, blessed by God. But what has happened? As time goes on, we got so absorbed in the things that we forget about where the source of that is and the blessing, and we live to work and produce all for ourselves instead of acknowledging the blessing and living from that blessing. Now, after that, then, is when Moses saw one of the Hebrew Egyptian taskmasters beating a Hebrew and mistreating greatly one of his Hebrew brothers, and he killed him. And it was reported back to Pharaoh. They went looking for him. And so that is when he left the land. He became a fugitive, settled in, took a wife in the land where he went to from the father, and he was keeping the herds of her father. And so let's jump to Exodus 2, 23 through 25. It says, "Now it came about in the course of many days that the king of Egypt died, and the sons of Israel sighed because of the bondage." Yeah, we probably would too. "And they cried out, and their cry for help because of the bondage rose up to God." What we know that when we call to Him, He will hear us. "And God heard their groaning, and He remembered His covenant with Abraham." The covenant that sealed the blessing for Abraham. And what did he say? "And to his children." So he remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and even now the children of Israel. 25 says, "And God saw the son of Israel, and he took notice of him. His eye was back upon him." Now, we must understand as we go into this that Moses also had no knowledge of God. He was living up in the pagan area as well. And so he did not have this understanding because he was raised as an Egyptian. So now go with me to the third chapter of Exodus, and I want to read verses 6 through 12, and we'll just talk about each one as we go through it. Now, this is the account of when Moses sees the burning bush, the glory of God. But what happens? That bush is not consumed. And he says, "I must turn and look at this." And God spoke to him, said, "Take your shoes off. This is holy ground." And thus the conversation begins. Verse 6, "And he said also, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. Then Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look." And what he was really beholding was the glory of God manifested in that fire. Now, it's interesting to me that here he's afraid to look. But later on, as he comes to know God, he wants to know Him even more. And what did he ask for? "I want to see more of your glory." That ought to be us day by day. Verse 7, "And the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people." So he hasn't forgot about the covenant. They're still his covenant people who are in Egypt and have given heed to their cry because of their taskmasters. For I am aware of their suffering. So the key part there is he's taking ownership. He's taking leadership of his people once again. And then he says, "So I have come down to deliver them from the power of the Egyptians and to bring them up." Now, when I read that, I immediately think of Ephesians 2, where it says, we died with Christ, we were made alive with him, we were raised up with him, and we've been seated. This is a prophetic word, I believe, of what Jesus was going to come to do for us. So he says, "I'm coming down to deliver them and bring them up from that land." And listen how he describes where he's taking them to a land that is good and spacious, to a land flowing with milk and honey, to the place where the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites, that's where they're living. And each of those names represents some anomaly of them walking not with God that the children of Israel had to overcome. One of them actually means talking. Can you just hear all the talking down that they were doing about it? But what does this land sound like? A very blessed land. Almost like he's restoring them back to the garden. Verse 9 says, "And behold, the cry of the sons of Israel has come to me furthermore, and I've seen the oppression which the Egyptians are oppressing them." And 10 says, "Therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh." So he is to be a carrier of the blessing back to the children of Israel. And it just hits me. That's what we are also called to do, a blessing that should be seen upon our life so that others take notice of it. I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring, here's my people again, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt. So where they had separated themselves by not having a knowledge of who he was, now he is restoring them into relationship with him. And then Moses in verse 11 asked this question of God, who am I? Now, what's he looking at? Just himself. He's not listening to some of the things that the Lord said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take you there. He's focusing on himself and he doesn't think he can do it. Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and that I should bring out the sons of Israel, should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? So Moses is starting the same thing that a lot of us do as we're born again, not changing our identity to see who we are as the son of the living God, as a joint heir with Jesus. And really what we're seeing here is that Moses had no awareness of the blessing, nor did he have any clue of how he could live from it. And in verse 12, here's the phrase again that we saw with Joseph. And the Lord said to him, certainly I will be with you. There is the blessing coming at work over him again. And this shall be a sign to you that it is you who I've sent. When you've brought the people out, you shall worship God at this mountain, which he did. I will be with you. My blessing is with you. My blessing will be upon you. My blessing is at work for you, through you, for my people. Now, we see something else important here too, and it ties in with the children of Israel, that the Lord has got to get, the Lord has got him and ready to go out of Egypt. I mean, out of where he is. But all of this that he has become is still in him, back to even his days in Egypt. So you might say, all right, he's got him out of Egypt. He's ready to send him back, but he doesn't have Egypt out of him. In other words, his way of thinking is not looking to the Lord first. Then we look over at Exodus 4, the first five verses. Then Moses answered him and says, what if they will not listen to me? Listen to what I say, for they may say the Lord has not appeared to you. In other words, what? Hey, you're just dreaming. How do we know this is real? And the Lord said to him, what's in your hand? And he said, a staff. Now, a staff was a tool that a shepherd uses, but I want you to see the significance. A scepter is what a king holds and rules with, which is a much smaller representation of that. And he said to him, throw it on the ground. So he threw it on the ground and it became a serpent. Moses fled from it. I would have too. And in verse 4, but the Lord said to Moses, stretch out your hand and grasp it by the tail. Now, this is key where he tells him to grasp it. If you're going to grab a snake, you never grab the tail because that thing can whip around and bite you. You grab what? Right behind the head of the snake so that you can control it. But listen to what he did. He believed God and he acted on what he told him. So he stretched out his hand and caught it, and it became a staff in his hand once again. And he said, this is what that they may believe that you're going to do. Now look down at verse 20 with me in this same chapter. Moses goes on, he gets his wife, and he's about to go and return to Egypt. And it says in the very last part of this book, Moses also took the staff of God in his hands. So the staff went from being Moses to when he yielded to him, it was God's staff. It belonged to the Father. It was now able to work and be a part of the blessing. And obviously it did. So many things that happened with that staff as they went through, from striking a rock to holding it up to win victories. If you look down at 22, this is also important. Then you shall say to Pharaoh, thus says the Lord, Israel is my son, my firstborn. Does that make you go back to think about firstborns being the blessed of the Lord and receiving that blessing? Privilege that comes with that. In other words, that firstborn, his people Israel, are due to be able to live under the blessing. Now let's jump ahead again. I'm not going to talk about the deliverance, Passover, and what all that happened, except just mentioning it. But I want to talk about them leaving Israel. And I want you to see that it was part of a covenant deliverance. The Passover meal was a covenant meal of them leaving, His commitment to them. And they left how? Blessed. I mean, great miracles, walking protected through the sea. But they also left, according to Psalm 105:37, what? With silver and gold, and no feeble among them. So we see blessings of health and blessings of financial. Again, the blessing at work. I want to point out that this goal was not just so they could go and make necklaces and things like that. It was to be able to build and do the things that the Lord wanted to, like the Ark of the Covenant, which was covered in gold. And even that Ark was done that way so that God could dwell in their midst. Think about provision for them, manna provided, water out of a rock that the staff of God struck, His presence covering them, protecting them, cloud by day, fire by night, even a supernatural victory over the Amalekites in the 17th chapter. But what is the purpose of all these? What is this trying to show the children of Israel? To look to Him for all these blessings that will be provided to them, not worry about and think about, how am I going to do it? Just like Moses, he's got them out of Egypt, but now he's got to get the ways of Egypt out of them to look to Him, to look to the blessing as their life. Now, we see that in spades. As Moses is up on the mountain, they think he's not going to come down. They build this calf with Aaron, and he comes down, and he's, what do they say? It jumped out of the fire. It came from the fire. No, it didn't. It came out of them as part of what Egypt had put in them. They had not gotten Egypt out of them. Now, also, I want you to consider this. Every one of the Ten Commandments He gave them on the two tablets that were given to Moses supports the blessing of the Lord over His people. Let me just get you to think about a few. You can look at them on your own. Don't covet. Just look to Me to provide. That's why He told them, have no other gods before Me. Don't elevate anything that you can do above Me or anything that you need above the ability of the blessing to provide it for you. Don't steal. Why? Because the blessing at work is going to provide for you. Don't take your neighbor's wife. I'll give you one that's exactly what you need. And same thing for a woman, for a husband. What is He wanting them to do? He's wanting them to look to Him who coveted the blessing to them. Now, His commandments that He gave them were not to oppress or burden, which to me sounds a lot like a curse, but they were to position them for the blessing. Living a blessed life versus a cursed life. Let me go to Deuteronomy 28, and I just want to, we'll skip through this for time's sake, because I'm not going to get to all that I had, but I can finish it up quickly in next week's session. What do these sound like that I'm about to read to you? Just listen. Verse 2, and all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you. Verse 3, blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. Verse 4, blessed shall be the offspring of your body and the produce of your ground. Verse 5, blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl, talking about their food supply and things like that. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. That's a verse we've been declaring over Ava as some of around her were being deployed, and even she thought she might be. We just begin to declare the blessing so it would be at work in her life. It goes on and says in verse 8, the Lord will command the blessing upon you. It says in 9, He's going to establish you as His holy people, My people. And turns right around to say, so that all the peoples of the earth can see that you belong to Me. What is He saying? So they can see the blessing. And so it just goes over and over and over. The blessing of the Lord, the fullness of the blessing at work in them. And then we say, yeah, but... goat talk. What about the rest of the chapter? All these curses. He's cursing them if they disobey. Really? Why would you think that? Let's go back to the garden. He didn't never curse Adam and Eve there. He removed them from the garden and protected them from eating of the tree of the knowledge, tree of life, so that we would be in that state and he couldn't reconcile us. But he never cursed men. And these curses are not being put upon the children of Israel. What are they doing? They're exposing to the children of Israel the blessing and now the curses of this world, of Satan's nature to steal, kill, and destroy. And that's going to remain in this earth until Jesus returns. Now let me just stop today with Deuteronomy 30, 19 and 20. And this is so true to us. He's making them aware of the blessing. And later on, this is what he says to him. Verse 19, Deuteronomy 30. I call heaven and earth to witness of you against you this day, that I have set before you life and blessing, life and death, the blessing and the curse. So choose life that you may live. You see, he didn't curse them. He placed it before them and said, you choose, and then he tells them why to choose life, that you may live, you and your descendants. And how are they going to live? Verse 20, by loving the Lord your God, by obeying his voice and holding fast to him. For this is your life and the length of your days, living life from the blessing, that you may live in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. So I would ask as we close today, who makes the determination of life and blessing? We do. We make a determination of what we believe, and he's telling us here to choose it. How do we do that? By renewing our minds, just like Romans 12, 1 and 2 says. Could I say it this way? By getting Egypt, by getting the worldly way of life out of us. But I'll close with this. There are always people when we talk about this who say, yeah, but what about Job? Well, I'm glad you asked, because that's exactly what we're going to take a look at in our very next session. I trust this ministered to you. See the life that we can live from this blessing. Go back and read Deuteronomy 28, verse 14 verses again. Let this come alive in you so that we can get Egypt out of us and walk in the fullness of his blessing. Bless you, and thank you for listening today.